so that the last of the impurities are shed off and then it will rematerialize. Whether it will be in the same solar orbit that we're in now, I don't know. I suspicion we may shift to a different solar system entirely because the conditions for the new life are not fully satisfied or met within the solar system that we live in. But that's for the future, but I want to mention these are the possibilities. So we're dealing in most of these messes with either the harvest problem or the labor pains. And they're both, as I say, physical and biological. Quote, starting on February 4th, 1976, there will be 1,369 shakings of the earth. And that is signed again by all three members of the nine that I mentioned, Aleph, Atz, I put the third name down in Tav. And Atz is spelled this way in Hebrew. This is an A sound and this is a T sound. This one is usually called Sadi. This is Aleph, right here. And I don't know whether any of you are familiar with Kabbalah, but if you are, one of the most sacred names in Kabbalah is called Azot. And it means that which is perfect. So this is the book of seven seals of Tav, you got that? And it will be opened within 56 days, which means December 1st, 75, got that? Okay. The season of harvest and of labor pains begins for the earth, got that? As it is written, it begins in this year, signed by Tav. Okay. Then I just said, starting on February 4th, 76, there will be 1,369 shakings of the earth. And that's signed by Aleph, Atz, and Tav. Now let me just give you some esoterica. It's an absolute historical fact, and if anybody doubts that I have this New York Times clipping with me, that the earthquake in Guatemala, which happened at 3 a.m., on February 4th, 1976, and went on for almost 2 months, that there were exactly, recorded by the U.S. Geological Survey, 1,369 major aftershocks, what the newspaper article says. But, as in all these sacred writings, and it's the only word we can give for this, there are kind of messages wrapped within messages. And I just want to give you one of the messages here. The number 1,369, if you translate the Greek word for Christ, Christ is only an English abortion of the original word Christos, as those of you who are religious scholars know. Christos spelled Chi, Lo, Iota, Sigma, Ta. Yes, Christos, famous Christ. Now, if you take the Gematria can be done in Greek or Hebrew, and it simply means you assign specific number values, which are standard, to those languages, and convert the letters into numbers. That's what Gematria is. Without going into all the details, this number actually adds up to 2,369. And then by the rules of Kabbalah or Gematria, you can subtract one or add one to any number. In this case, since we are dealing with Aleph, it's very important. Aleph has a value of 1,000 minus 1,000. The true Gematria number of Christ is 1,369. And these are one of the, and then there are a lot of more esoteric built-in values into those few letters that we got from the Hebrew. And later on you will see that part of these messages has to do with the return of the Messiah. And that's why I bring up at this point that the message is encoded already at the beginning, although you have to really dig, do combinations and permutations, extract this information. What I'm giving you is the crude, surface, raw text interpretation. I'm not going into all the deep details. Quote, this will be followed, that is the first earthquake, so I'll start again. Quote, this will be followed by earthquakes and cataclysms for 90 months. Okay, in 90 months, you're going to make a note right there, I'm end quoting myself, ends on August 24th, 1982. I mean 90 months, that's next week. Okay. Quote, land and mountains will melt, shake, and sink in the following 80 months. That's following August 24th, 82, and this period extends to August 17th, 1988. Now, just to tell you how all this was calculated, when you deal with this kind of material, you don't use modern sidereal days or months. When you talk about months, you use the ancient lunar months, which is the time it takes for the moon to go around the earth once. And the lunar month is 27.32 days. So all this was run through calculations to get the exact period time frame. So we're dealing with two separate time frames. And I've already told you, the only reason I'm releasing this information is I have clocked all the information for the first 7-year period ending August 24, 82, which is now, and found the predictions to be accurate. And most of them are natural weather events. We're now entering a period which will end in 1788. And that is the period obviously of concern. The period behind this is simply to check and verify the decoding, the accuracy of this information, and whether it's good, bad, evil, reliable, etc., etc. I know it's from a scientific point of view, we don't get concerned very often about evil and good, and you never find those words in scientific literature unless you're talking about some guy who's a bum or a crook. But processes are processes. We place no moral values. But in this kind of work, we have to be sure of the source. I might tell you a rather amusing story of how this thing works out and how people are easily influenced by this concept of good and evil and events. When I first began to introduce Uri to the scientific world to validate his powers, I also kept my eyes over my shoulders to the reaction from the religious community. The religious community has been capable of starting more wars and slaughtering more people than all the military people in the world. And that's a fact of history. So I had to be aware of them. So I had Uri meet various religious leaders, and one of them was Archbishop Iakov of the Armenian Orthodox Church, and his headquarters is in New York. And some Armenian friends had arranged this meeting, and it was held in Waldorf Astoria in a private suite, and the bishop's throne was brought in, and he sat on his throne with all his gadgetry. And it was kind of amusing to me as a scientist to see this. And Uri was there as a poor supplicant who was going to show the great figure some of his powers. So Uri bent some metal and did some ESP, and the bishop was very nice and attentive and listened. And he said, and he looked at me and he looked at her and he said, "But my son, is this good or is it evil?" Now I know that's an important question for a theologian, but for a scientist it's kind of a laugh, okay? So I said, "How are we ever going to resolve this question for the good archbishop?" The next phase of the meeting was a dinner, and it was served by two tough, burly Waldorf Astoria waiters who've been on the job for 30 years, and they always had their finger in the soup, that type, and they're telling you what to order, etc. They weren't English-type butlers. So the bishop ordered the wine, and it was a Chilean white wine, and I still have the bottles because it's a rather interesting occasion. And the two waiters offered the wine for tasting to the bishop first, and then they went around the table, and the last person who got one of the bottles poured to him was Uri. Well, everybody had nice white wine poured into their glass, but when he got to Uri, this always makes me laugh, the wine came out blood red. And the waiter, in his good Brooklyn accent, said, "Jesus Christ!" He said, "No!" It looked like that was short. Well, the moral of the story is that once the bishop saw the old water and the wine trick, he knew it was good. Well, obviously, the whole thing is specious, but that was his standard of good and evil, okay? Think about that. All right, I quote again. Quotes. I'll read slowly so you can write this down. "The New Age begins in 4,668 days. Then the work of Shin ends. This brings us to the period of September 9th, 2000.
And forecast.
Now, 4,668.
Listen, I got a tape recorder for you. You want to come up and get it?
Yes, I guess.
Okay. As I told you earlier, I'm not sure exactly who Shin, again, one of the powers that be, the Hebrew letter Shin looks like this. That equals S, it's called Shin. I suspect from other research I've done, and I might add that part of the decoding process was to try various top-notch mediums that I knew on this planet. I flew across many continents to have interviews and test situations, and these persons helped to fill out some of this material. One of the mediums who I can't identify because he's not known in the world as a medium, he's known as a great scientist, one of the big covers people have to operate under, interpreted this in what I consider first-class channeling, that Shin was in fact the Shaddai of the Bible, another or alternate name, as you know, for the Elohim or the gods, and that Shaddai was the one who works, if you remember my diagram, under Yehovah, one of the people who is a lieutenant who is specifically in charge of Earth and has been for the last 6,000 years. And the fact that his work ends simply means he's gotten through a cycle and some other soul will take that position. That's an interpretation, not literally out of this text. Now the material is going to be difficult and esoteric, and I will try to go very carefully. What I'm going to do is to read the entire text, and then we'll go back over it and try to untangle what it means. So I'll read slowly so you can take notes. Quote, the 135 plus Aleph, you have the Aleph up there, which equals 136, comma, the principles, the divine ones, will arrange to bring forth to your hand the new rootstock, comma, the foundation for the destined new race of humanity during the coming 3,480 days. Now that is a period from 1975, December 1st, 1975, to 1985. End quote.
Would you repeat that this in the past?
Which part? The whole thing?
The whole thing.
Okay, once more. The 135 plus Aleph, which equals 136. The principles, the divine ones, will arrange to bring forth to your hand the new rootstock, comma, the foundation for the destined new race of humanity during the coming 3,480 days. That period covers 1975 to 85, 10-year period. End quote. Everybody got it? Okay. Here's where we get into very arcane matters, and I hope you can follow all this. Notice we have mentioned 135 principles, prime movers, people. These are extraterrestrial, they're not earthly, okay? And Aleph, when you say 135 plus Aleph, Aleph is the generating force in the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. If there's anything that characterizes it, it is creative, generative force, whether it be in physics, chemistry, biology, whatever. Aleph always has that meaning. So it is Aleph who is a leader, and 135 are followers, and from them, and we'll get to it later, will be brought to earth the new rootstock for future humanity. Now you remember I went at great length into, there was a lot of interest here, into the biological aspects of this, how women were fertilized, how the pregnancy proceeded in terms of children appearing and disappearing from the womb. All this is matter of fact, documented. And children were either born, and I delivered them, are on earth, alive and growing up, or they were dematerialized from their mother's womb, and they went somewhere where we don't know where, but the assurance is that they will come back to earth to do their work. And these who disappear, actually, will amount to 135 of the rootstock. In other words, they'll all come back intact. And in that genetic pool, you'll have the beginning of the whole next 6,000 years of humanity. Now notice there's some odd numbers here. For example, if you remember, I showed you a number which had to do with earthquakes originally, 1,369. But if you parse this number, it becomes 136, and you can have plus 9, which is like the 135 plus Aleph, which means that you have 136 beings under the creation of the 9. I think we all understand what I mean by the 9 now, okay? But these numbers go on, and you can come out with quite exact scientific formulations of those numbers. Now, I don't think it's appropriate for me, because one of my jobs is to protect these youngsters who have been born and those mothers who are having children, because we've had a lot of trouble with this process. People immediately think you're into some kind of a Nazi super race idea, and that you're going to take over the world by power, and it's not the intent here at all. It's a matter of generating a new stock, and the generation is under the aegis of the highest that mankind can know, and as far as we know, the highest ethical and moral precepts that we know are behind this, and there's nothing negative, evil, or satanic about it. people who do not know, who do not understand, know that it is different, and therefore they must exterminate you. And we've had to go to the extreme measures of hiding these people away in different parts of the planet, in mountains that are inaccessible, and so on. It's just the way it is. So it's a very important function on my part to protect both the mothers and the children and make sure that we get a full harvest of a 135 plus the generated force behind them. But these are very heavy burdens that we bear. And I wish when you talk to your friends and spread the word that remember that there is a heavy, heavy responsibility here. Continue. During this period, quote, during the last 46 months of this period, and that is December 1st, 1981, to June 14th, 1985, secret knowledge will be brought forward from behind the veil. And that's signed by Aleph. That's the end of the quote. Now, this is a very small, trivial sentence. And what I'm going to do, anybody need to take a break or should we just continue? Let's continue. What I'm going to do is explain what secret knowledge means. All of science is engaged in a quest to understand the nature, not only of the universe, that is the domain of astronomy and astrophysics, but the nature of the earth, geology, and so on, but the nature of all living things, plant studies, bacterial studies, algae studies, the whole cycle of life, which I briefly alluded to yesterday, including man and the nature of this. I call man a macromolecule. That means he's the biggest molecule, maybe outside of an elephant, that we have around, but certainly we have more of these molecules. And we're trying to understand man from many different levels. Medicine tries to understand man from the point of view of where he breaks down. That's why medicine exists, to patch together the person. The whole healing art exists also for the same reason, to put people back together into shape so they can function. There is a pure study of what man is about called anatomy and physiology and biochemistry, which tries to understand how it all happened. And at this stage in molecular biology, as you well know, we have reached a point where we think we know something about DNA and RNA, in other words, the genetic code, how the blueprint for a living thing can exist in a package that's so tiny that you can't see it with the naked eye, and yet it goes on thousands and thousands of years without being significantly changed. In other words, it's a hard wiring diagram, as they say in engineering, to produce a living thing. And in this case, of course, being chauvinistic, we're interested in mankind. We're not interested too much in bugs and bacteria and lions and tigers and all that. We have a very selfish interest in our makeup. But having solved the code, let's say, of how life is created from a few elements and encoded and carried on and on and on, really one of the great mysteries, we really haven't answered any of the fundamental mysteries about mankind. And we can say, as scientists do, well, it all happened by a certain combination and permutation which someday we'll understand in terms of quantum mechanics, and it's all a lawful operation, and this thing just grew like Topsy. Or we have the creationist group who say, no, all this was created by the mind of God or some sub-agent of God, and therefore the biological process was a created thing and not an evolutionary thing. All these raise great questions. Now beyond this, and I'm just trying to explain where secret knowledge is and what we're looking for, beyond this we have the nature and ability of the functioning living organism. That's all of us. We can all feel ourselves. We know what that is. But we know that there are characteristics of the living thing that is beyond vision. We're all looking at each other. We're hearing each other. We can smell each other and feel the vibrations of each other. These things can pretty well now be explained scientifically, not totally, but pretty well. But beyond that, and this is pertinent to this group, we know that we can lay our hands, a very simple process, on water or on people, and they get put together right. Healing occurs. Energies, control, guidance that are involved absolutely baffle modern science. They won't even look at this phenomenon. Maybe three people on the planet, okay, scientifically. We know that, as I've already gone into in some detail, so I'll skip through it quickly, that not only can we put our hands on the water and give it healing power for plants and any living thing without any distinction, that is, we don't have to imprint the genetic pattern for a disease that occurs in an elephant here specifically. It works, it's a universal kind of solvent and balm. But we can also put our hands on this water and make the water disappear. And we can also teleport this thing and make the pitcher of water occur intact somewhere, appear intact somewhere else on the planet. And so it goes to, we can teleport mice and cats, and I know this all sounds crazy to some of you, but you have to see it to believe it, and what I'm telling you I've actually witnessed and experienced. And so on, the order of phenomena that are outside the domain of science and medicine continues. So the secret knowledge that we're talking about is beyond anything that we're practically dealing with in science or law or religion or healing or spiritualism. We're trying to understand the secret laws. We're trying to understand why a human being can just go into a very quiet state and, as we say, get messages, pick up information. Spirit entities can appear in a room. If you're lucky, you can photograph them. They can move instruments and so on and so on. So these are the things that are the secrets that we're trying to probe. How was life really created? Why does life go wrong? A good example of that would be cancer, for example. It appears to be a normal process, suddenly destroys the organism. What is the connectedness? This is a physical problem. Between all things, the so-called Bell's theorem problem. I don't want to go into details because it's very sophisticated and technical. But the idea behind Bell's theorem is that for reasons unknown yet, a thing that happens here and a thing that happens somewhere else are always connected, especially if they occur or originate simultaneously from the same source. And the ultimate extension of that theory, I don't know whether any of you put your minds to this, but if God did create everything, and I personally believe He did, and the He is not chauvinistic, it's just a way of handling a particle here. If He created everything and is the source, then everything thereafter, according to Bell's theorem, is ultimately connected. And that's a Bell wouldn't agree to that, but it's a logical extension of his proposal. We have the whole problem of connectedness, then, if that principle exists, and at least on the Earth platform, we have good reason to believe it exists from experiments in parapsychology. What is the connection, then, between us as living entities and living entities on other planets? Surely no one could deny that there must be life in many, 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 many places of the universe. It would be against the laws of all science to say that life could only exist on one little ball and not on a billion other balls. And yet we have very little knowledge or understanding of communication between us and people and other civilizations. Now we have a lot of rough empirical data about that. But if you notice, most of it rarely gets outside the solar system. That is, you have visitors from or contacts with Mars or Venus, some local event, but nobody deals very extensively with things way at the limit of astronomical observation. These are very important problems. And a secret that we must understand is what I've been talking about. how living beings on this little ball of earth here are related to creator beings, that is, beings who somehow are more directly related to God, you know, in some hierarchical sequence, who in turn have something to do with creating life, managing life, let's say here on this little ball in which we live. In very small and simple ways to myself and the people I work with. And I'll give you an example of some of the kinds of secret knowledge that's been revealed. For example, one of the great problems of the earth now, and I illustrated this in the diagram of what we're doing to the interior of the planet of the earth, the planet earth, but to the atmosphere, the whole life support system of the biosphere, and it is not good. And one of the main reasons is we're pumping too many things out of the earth, like oil and water and gases and minerals and uranium, etc., and upsetting the body of the earth. Even though it has great self-healing capacity, it nevertheless is now beginning to show the signs of a lot of abuse. Well, one of the big problems facing a new civilization, I think it's a little too late to help our civilization, is that what's called clean, renewable energy. That means that you have some source of energy that you keep using over and over and over and over again. You don't put it in your tank and that's it. You have some way of renewing it. And clean means that it has no toxic effect, whether it's carbon dioxide, nitrous oxide, ozone, whatever. So it's something that's natural. There are such energy systems around and people have been working on them for many years. The obvious one is solar energy. The sun builds a huge biomass on the earth every year. I forget the number of millions and millions of tons of biomass produced, that leaves, flowers, and fruits, and so on. And that is all the work of the sun. It's a very clean, efficient process. Without it, as I think I already explained, we could not live. We need to get oxygen from somewhere. Plants make it. We have to dispose of our carbon dioxide waste somewhere. Plants take that in as food. But there is a simpler way, and maybe one has to combine sun with another form of energy, and that is to take ordinary H2O and split it apart into hydrogen and oxygen, and pound for pound, it is one of the most high energy yielding fuels we know. You can get something like 237,000 joules of energy out of about half the amount of water that's in here. You can do a lot of work with that amount of energy. And that is about six times the amount of energy you'd get out of an equivalent weight of high-grade gasoline. And as I explained yesterday, when you combine hydrogen and oxygen and get the heat out of it, the caloric value, the fuel value, it recombines into water, and the water can be recycled. The simplest way is to let it go back into nature, let it rise up into the atmosphere, get its energy level all pumped up by the sun, drop back to earth as water, and then break it up again, and so the cycle goes on. Clean and high yield efficiency, and it can be made in very small packages. So, you might be amused to know how some of this information came through. We were living, my wife and I, in the mountaintop in Mexico, 10,000 foot altitude, very healthy level to live at. And I had a little tent. We had our camper. The tent was my laboratory, and the camper was my alternating current generator. And I did most of the basic experiments in 11 months with a lot of meditation and a lot of cross-checking on the top of the mountain. That never got into the Science Digest story. It wouldn't go over page. So anyway, that's one kind of knowledge. It is possible, and I'm working very hard at it, to get practical utilization of this fundamental phenomenon of nature. That is a form of secret knowledge. A lot of people are working on it, but there are a lot of problems. It's not an efficient thing yet. I believe from the approach we've taken, it can be efficient. Another fundamental problem, I think there are some scientists here who might be interested in going over some of this data, is how does life originate? We can solve that problem in such a simple way that sounds ridiculous to talk about it. I'll just use this little piece of space. I started out, this is all completed work, how this life originates. We have found out that all we need to create life is sodium, chlorine, oxygen, hydrogen. Four elements of building blocks, that's all you need. You say, where's the carbon, where's the nitrogen, etc., I'll show you. And then to make this reaction go, you need two catalysts, you need copper and you need iron. These are catalysts. So you need a total of six elements to create life. How do you do this? You start out with water. You have about a 0.15 molar solution of sodium chloride. We have salt water, just like in the sea, but none of the other elements that occur in the sea, magnesium, potassium, calcium, etc., just these elements. And these catalyze the reaction. And then you need something that guides the molecules. Very important part. You need a guiding hand behind the elements. And we use a form of what's called alternating current, where the pulse height is important, the current, the voltage, the waveform, and so on. And we modulate these elements in water, and within 3 minutes, we can get the first sign of life, which is the production of amino acids and formic acid. And within about 6 minutes, we go to what are called pyroles, which are compounds that have this form. And four of these get together, and they form something called heme. And I'll just give you a little picture of that. And when I go into the exact thing, we'll do that separately. And then if you add either iron, you add iron in the center here, you get hemoglobin, which is the oxygen transport system of the mammalian cell. But if you put magnesium in that cell, and you add a little side chain here of a simple compound, you get chlorophyll. So the beginning of life is something that can accept radiation from the sun. A photon hits here, kicks out an electron, and from this process, you have water split into hydrogen and oxygen. And the oxygen is given off by plants through a rather elaborate mechanism. And the hydrogen is fed to carbon dioxide, and you get from formic acid, formaldehyde, and sugars. So we live on sugar and oxygen. So the whole sequence of life has been pretty well worked out by the most sophisticated modern techniques of mass spectroscopy and gas chromatography and liquid gas chromatography. And we pretty well understand. Now, I mentioned earlier that there are some elements vital to life that are missing. There's something called a Chevron reaction. Anybody ever heard of it? The Chevron reaction, discovered by Louis Chevron in France, is called also biological transmutation of elements. And the original experiments were very simple. Chevron took chickens, or chicks, that had just been hatched, and raised them in an environment that was absolutely free of calcium. But they had plenty of potassium. And potassium is K19 potassium. And he found that it transmutes the calcium 20. And that the chicks grew up normally because in the body there's a process that converts this and very low energies to this. Well, we found the Chevron reaction in a new method where oxygen becomes a feedstock, and oxygen, O16, goes to nitrogen 14, goes to carbon 12. And there are other reactions like that. So you can create the elements you need that difference between this and this, incidentally, for those who don't recognize it, is one proton. You drop one proton and one neutron out of this and you get this. Drop one proton and neutron and you get this. But this reaction will not go unless you have chlorine. Chlorine, as some of you may know, is a specific absorber of neutrons and neutrinos. So when these the neutrino goes from here, it is absorbed by chlorine, and this is a specific function of this molecule in building life. But anyway, these are all built-in laws. I'm not saying that we're recreating what God has created. We're simply showing that on a bench condition, you can create all the elements that make up life. And beyond this, without going into all the details, we've discovered how these elements actually are the fundamental mechanism of cancer. And we've also discovered two separate treatments. So these are the kinds of things that are, and I'm going into all this detail to show you that not only is secret knowledge promised, but secret knowledge has been delivered. I'm also telling you I'm not so bright. A lot of this information came by inspiration and accidents during the technological development and so on and so on. So in other words, guidance is involved, yes.
Can you show, is there any connection in Ottawa between Pace's work and with the Canadian government starting to go into the water hydrogen cycle to try to start producing energy? Is there any possible problems in that?
Well, not only is the Canadian government doing that, trying to utilize the energy from water, but many governments all over the world are. It's a worldwide race for a new fuel. And so there's no particular relevance with respect to what Canadian government. There is an accidental element there, and this is of the purest chance. I have a nephew, my sister's son, who happens to be the director of policy for the new energy programs of Canada. And it's pure accident. And so I get a lot of information from him as to what's going on casually. But there's no real connection, though. They're going at it what we call the old brute force method. They've not really come up with a sophisticated, economical, clean system of doing this. And I pretty well know their programs. So there's no real connection. I just want to give that to you to show you that something is going on. Now I get to the next section, and I'm going to have to explain all this in some detail. So I quote, prepare to sustain yourself for 10 years from 1989 to 1999 in mountain strongholds, fortified against all destructive effects, a fortress. You have until 1989 to prepare it. Make it secure against all adversities. Okay. There's a very profound meaning behind this, which was not apparent when it first came up against it. In the first place, we were not fully aware of how these new children were going to be born, where they were going to be born, whether we'd ever see them or have anything to do with them. So when the first child came to our hands in 1979, we still were not sure. It took a half a dozen more children to tell us what was going on. And at this time, most of the people I was in contact with, not a big group, about 100, around the earth, no centralized activity, were all beginning to get uprooted and shifted out of their positions and so on. And I had a little problem, as I told you, with the government and my house being burned and so on. So I went to Mexico first with my wife in 1978 in September. And We learned the language. Although I've been to Mexico many, many, many times, I never really got into the language or the culture or the Indians and so on and so on. But this time we were on a survival course, and we had to live with the natives away from the so-called white man and be protected by the natives and so on. And they were very good to us, I must say. And so we learned how to live in a mountain area. We literally lived in a fortress. We had 30-foot high stone walls, which is not too unusual in a Latin culture, some of you may know. And we're perched on top of the mountain. It was almost impossible to reach us. And yet it was not a conspicuous place. And I was looking at these messages to see what it meant. And eventually, what happened was that the group that I was working with pretty much decided to split from wherever they were, and this is from Europe and North America and South America, a few from Asia. And my wife and I paved the way, since we'd been living in Mexico, to establish many of these young people. About 50 of them got together, and we set up what might be called a fortress, although what it is a self-sufficient community in terms of water, food, resources, and so on. And it is not a centralized community. You can't find it very easily. It is scattered over quite an area. So all the events fell together, and this group is one of the main nuclei of raising children and living this kind of life and being in contact with higher beings and extraterrestrials and so on. So all this did come to pass without our forcing the issue at all. Events made it happen. And so this, I don't want to identify it because it wouldn't help anybody either here or there, but it's a very important part of this effort to make sure that the children at least and the mothers are well protected and taken care of.
What's the message you have to do with that?
What?
It seems like you're bypassing the message, so is this a global message that we just got? Or is this more specific to your
situation? It's not a global message. This one is a personal message saying, in essence, one, you're going to have the responsibility for these 135 new souls, right? And you've got to take care of them, you've got to set up an incubator. And you have to survive this terrible period that's coming up these next 7 years. That's not a global message in any sense. It's a private message for a small group of people. Well, I'm telling you the message, so you get the idea too. But unless you're going to have a baby, and I'm not just joking. All you have to do is listen to the radio, read any magazine. Doomsday stuff is everywhere. As far as a fortress, a place, I think everybody has to work that out for themselves. This is a very narrow band function place. We didn't dump our scientists there. We didn't dump technology there. We didn't dump leaders. We didn't dump healers. We didn't do that. Very specifically for children and mothers.
You said it is important to survive for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And do we understand that we have
10
years?
A little louder, I can't.
Do we understand that there was 10 years to get ready from 79 to 89? Or?
Yeah, 10 years. Yeah.
And
then 10
years after that is the
period. Right, yeah. Now, we're going to get to some very heavy stuff. It keeps getting heavier and heavier. We'll do the best we can.
The 4 times 6, that is Dalit times Bhav, its prince, the head of the 24 civilizations, the hidden one, the divine one, Rosh, will appear in 2,560 days, that is in the year 1995, for each and everyone to see. Tremble at the mention of the divine name. Purify yourself. Signed by Toth. The 135 will come in 89 months, that is in 1995. Aleph, that's signed twice. humble yourself, signed by Toth. The 135 begot of Aleph and the 24, beginning in 1988, will minister to ensure that the mountain stronghold is kept secret and secure for the He and the Vav, the archetypes of universal life, gathered as the rootstock from the 135 principles, the seeds for future humanity.
Okay, end of the quote. So, a little difficult to understand this, so we have 235 here. We have first those who are coming to help, and they start in 1978 to come to minister and help. And then you have the rootstock, the children, the tiny little ones being born, either being born on earth or being born and shipped back somewhere, wherever they come from, for training until they come back to earth. And so we have the 135 who are here to protect the other 135 who are being already born in considerable numbers in the mountain stronghold. And I apologize for to any of you who think this is some kind of elitist thing. It is only a necessary incubator to protect them from the predatory instincts of mankind. And it's the same thing you would do with a premature infant in a hospital. You put them in a special incubator and protect them from the environmental onslaught which might lead to death. So we have a very high responsibility, but it's nothing to do with elitism in any sense. As Tom suggested, it might be a feeling that everybody else was important who was going to go through this because they want to go through it, they want to help, is being cut out. That's not true at all. You'll find your own sources of guidance, your own contacts. If you get into this swim really dedicated both to God on the one hand, as you know Him, and to humanity's future, there's no question you're going to get into this swim. So much of this is predestined in one sense, that most of us who are involved in this work came back to Earth specifically to do this kind of work. And we made the contract before we got here. And many of you have done the same thing. But you also have to be true to your contract. As I told you earlier, it's my bitter experience that most who come back agreeing to do this work somehow can't act it here on Earth. The conditions defeat them, or they get lost in some sidetrack and they fail. So every individual who has come back to help, and as I say, there are a lot of them, really has to look to himself to be his own fortress, and all these other things will happen. Now we get back to your question. I'm sorry, I ran away from the time.
I was just curious whether the 135 were the ones that survived out of the hundreds that you said had succumbed. In other words, 99 don't help.
No. We're speaking about two sets of 135, of course, as I explained. I have seen great difficulties amongst a few of them, but since we continually work on them and support them, so far everybody is surviving or making it, so to speak, if that's the intent of your question. As far as the other 235, the children, knock on wood and all that stuff, we've got 100% batting average so far. We've pulled them all through.
What is the quote that you're talking about, where for every 100 sent, 99 fail?
The what?
For every 100 sent, 99 fail. What is that referring to?
I hate to go into all the sad stories.
In other words, is that a rootstock
you're
referring to, or?
I really hate to go into it because it's like my own children, and I really weep for them because I've worked with them and tried to help them. They've seen the light. They remember their own civilization. They remember the contract. But what happens? put it very simply, conditions of life, Earth, are so negative and down for them because they come from a brighter world. They try to shield it or screen it off. Being in the age we live in, they usually screen themselves off, usually with drugs, secondly with sex, thirdly with power. This is the sequence of events. And once they get themselves shielded off from the Earth, they automatically somehow shield themselves off from their commission, their origins, their goal, and they just go downhill. And some of them, the worst part, are those who sell out literally to black forces, and they become black magicians with a lot of power on this planet. I've had to sweat blood for a lot of them for a number of years to get past that particular temptation. So it's a rough course. You could write whole reams of psychiatric textbooks as to what happens, and of course, basically, no psychiatrist, well, a few that I know, I'm sorry, a few psychiatrists know about these people because I've sent them to them, and some of them themselves are psychiatrists, and some of them are well-known psychiatrists. But psychiatry has no niche for this type of personality development or soul development problem. Maybe a place like Lilydale would be the place where they should come to, like I call them broken dolls that have to be repaired, where they can maybe get put together. But once they get into this wrong track, it's tough. I've pulled quite a few back and feel very happy about that. But a lot of them are just beyond your reach. You can't really help them. Anyway, so you want to ask questions?
135 know who they are.
And what?
135 know who they are. 135.
Yeah, yeah. That's not like the Talmudic tradition, right? There's contact, yes.
I think at least the first time. Are they all
age spread all over? The whole age spread, all the way from little kids to 90-year-old people, and believe it or not.
And they're all living now.
Yes, they're all here, all living. I mean, I haven't met all of them yet.
In all categories.
In all categories. Some of them are world famous figures, actually, that you would recognize immediately. And some you never would hear of because they're buried somewhere inside. Yeah.
Identify them.
You what?
How do you identify them?
Oh. Well, like, how does a dog identify his master? You smell him out. what that means is you have 10,000 or 10 million indices as to who they are. Because I've gone through this empirically. I first discovered one, and then I got a lot of instruction from extraterrestrial sources, and then I worked with them and of different languages and cultures and nationalities, and with a little psychic insight, you just smell them out. There's no one badge that, no, they're built to look like everybody else. Yes, Sherry.
Could I ask if there's a difference in their aura?
Yeah. You can spot them easily in their aura, yeah.
Could you tell us some of the indication?
Well, it would be obvious, the very bright golden auras, yeah. You can see them very easily. If they got up on a stage in front of you, you'd all see a tremendous aura, maybe something. I mean, very obvious.
I asked because there's a lady who was here earlier this year who had a workshop on the color of the sound. And she said that clairvoyances have witnessed Uri Geller's aura, say that there is a silver in that aura that they have witnessed with no one else.
Well, there's a little bit of a problem about the aura now that you brought it up. See, these things just go deeper and deeper. They never end. I'm going to shock you again, so bear with me. You know what a bionic person is, right? A person who's got some mechanical part, and you've seen the bionic man and all that stuff on television. Well, one of the aspects of bioengineering from Yehovah is that people who have special jobs to do, Uri Geller is an example of that, have what are called implants. Now you have to see an implant to know what an implant is. You know what solid-state microcircuitry is? I mean, ultimately, you can put that whole tape recorder, theoretically, by modern physics, into a pinhead. We know that. Solid-state devices, okay? And technology is working to reach that level. Well, that's all been accomplished a long time ago by civilizations. So, if you need super hearing, let's say, as an example, you're going to be a super musician or hear things that people don't normally hear, you have a little implant put in the ear. It looks like a little, looks like an old-fashioned phonograph needle. I'll explain to you how I know this for sure. I was walking on the beach in the southern